This is a scar tissue, written by Glenwy, read by Mistborn Hero. A The Magnus Archive and The Bright Sessions crossover, rated for teen and up audiences, featuring the relationship Samantha Barnes, Mark Bryant, as well as the character John Sims. It is tagged for Hurt Comfort. Episode 160, The Eye Opens, Time Travel, Apocalypse, Sam Fucks Around and Finds Out. This alternative universe has so many fun things to play with, so naturally I gave them some trauma. Author notes: you do not have to read An Atypical Alliance to follow this fic. It is just me playing around with Sam's power and the fears and her proclivity for overstepping boundaries and invading others' privacy to satisfy her own curiosity. The first time Sam saw the apocalypse, she told herself that it was a precaution, a necessary invasion of privacy in order to protect her loved ones. She wasn't even rationalizing with that logic, wanting to confirm someone's stories when they tumble into your life claiming to be a harbinger of the apocalypse from another dimension is hardly unreasonable, right? Since Sam met Joanne, her life has been considerably weirder than it used to be, but she's been time traveling for quite a while now, and there is a limit to even her suspension of disbelief. More recently, she's been dating a man who can copycat her own ability and was stuck in a coma for 3 years while his consciousness was living in the 1800s, thanks to an experiment gone wrong, and even that sounded less far-fetched than the story John dragged with him into Joan's office. When she saw the thing he had survived, the things he had seen, fuck. She honestly has no idea what pushed her to knock on their door and spill her guts, except maybe the desperate impulse to confirm that she wasn't losing her mind, that what she had seen did in fact happen somewhere out there. The second time Sam saw the apocalypse, it was an accident. She tumbled into its aftermath in the throes of her own panic and through pure serendipity. She managed to bring back news from John and Martin's world after their departure from the fears. When she left their apartment that night, she felt like she had intruded upon an incredibly private moment. The memory of the way John crumpled with relief and guilt and grief and who knows what else. It is a sight she will never forget, and one she will never tell another soul about. It is not hers to share. Sam was never much good at living with her own emotions, and seeing them destroyed and remained in front of her that way made her feel sticky, restless, itchy, a dozen different kinds of uncomfortable that all boiled down to, these feelings aren't for me, and I don't know how to react to them. That is to say that the third time Sam goes back, she doesn't have any reason or excuse that wouldn't collapse at the first sign of a scrutiny. Who wouldn't wonder, though? What makes a man end the world? What circumstances could take academic curiosity, turn it up to 11, and twist it into something that crawls up your pant leg and starts chewing on your heels? How does a person go from wanting to solve a mystery to being unable to turn away from a question, even after the answers have burrowed into your skin, cut open your throat, melted your hand, and killed your closest friends? The third time she goes back, it is one of the most difficult things she's ever done. June was the one who helped her figure out the trick of it. Her power has always been tied to her emotions and the safety of her ability. The intangibility and invisibility it offers has made it the first line of defense against panic. Some people chew their nails. Some people hit a punching bag. Some goes back in time. Everyone copes somehow, right? Thanks to this reflex, Sam wasn't able to stay for long the first few times she traveled intentionally. She always felt something tugging her back to the present, like a little corner of her brain saying, "Hey, you're safe now," with a line tied directly to her power. She's had plenty of practice by now, and she can usually jump whenever and wherever she wants to intentionally. However, taking a power that works best when she's afraid and trying to shove it directly at something that terrifies her to her core feels like trying to make two magnets stick together at the same pole. It is difficult, it is slippery, it is frustrating. She jumps to the wrong place and time across a dozen different attempts before she finds what she's looking for, and when she does finally land, it takes all the self-control she has to keep her breath steady and slow. "Hello, John," he begins. Sam doesn't want to believe she succeeded at first. Hell, she almost slingshots herself right back to the present when she heaves a sigh of relief and lets herself sag against the open wooden doorframe of the bedroom John has tucked himself into. His breath catches and shudders in his throat as he sets aside a sheet of paper, his trembling hand delicately turning it face down on the desk. More from habit than anything else, Sam takes stock of her surroundings. The snug cabin has a lot of bare wood, faded and gray with age. Its ceiling is low and its rafters exposed and dusty. The desk, where John fights his losing battle, is at the foot of the bed, a bed which appears to be more of a futon, barely big enough for two, and piled high with quilts and patchy afghans in a dozen different colors. It would be unfair to call the air dusty, but the light that cuts across the room through the curtains seems to catch and drift on the air. John's breath catches in his throat again, and Sam watches the back of his head for a few seconds, forcing herself to breathe steadily and stay focused. He looks nice with his hair down, she thinks. She's only ever seen it pulled back into a loose bun or a braid, but as he tries to bite back the end of the world, it tumbles across his shoulders in gentle curls, and there's quite a bit less gray than Sam remembers him having. For a few long moments, she considers walking around to one side of the desk so she can see his face, curious to know if his eyes always looked so tired, or if it was only the apocalypse that furrowed crow's feet into his skin. She can't bring herself to move, though. She's frozen in the doorway, her heart crawling quietly into her throat as she listens to his statement. It is only when John begins the incantation that Sam starts to suspect she's made a mistake. Naturally, she already felt a bit guilty at the thought of intruding on this particular part of John's past, dodging plans and aligning her calendar for a day when Mark would be out before attempting this trip so she might avoid having to justify herself. But this is more than the seeping, insidious regret that accompanies a guilty conscience. This is bone-clenching, gut-wrenching terror. The end of the world begins quietly enough. Where moments ago dust motes skipped across the room, a cloud rolls in from the sun, and the light in the cabin shifts from gold to blue and silver. Around her, The cabin groans and shivers and almost seems to bend inwards at the corners at the sound of John's voice. Sam's legs lock up beneath her as she feels a rush of hot air on the back of her neck, a spritz of something damp like a predator's sneeze while it prints over her carcass. There's nothing there. Sam knows this. She's absolutely certain that the end of the world, as John witnessed it, did not involve any monsters breaking down doors, but even as she thinks this to herself, she isn't quite so sure anymore. It is hard to remember, with that hot breath on her neck and something watching her. Sam whirls on her heel, certain something is behind her, something is watching her, but no. No, that isn't right. She is alone here. She is always alone here. Even when she is surrounded by people, she is nothing more than a hiccup in reality, not even a whisper on the lips of the people she watches. And even when she goes home from her trips, nobody ever sees her. Stop, Sam gasps. Stop it, whatever you're doing. You who watch and know and understand none. John drones. How would you even know? She snaps, taking a step forward and stumbling on an uneven floorboard as thunder rolls through the room. She is dizzy. Why is she dizzy? You can't see me, she whispers, but she doesn't believe the words as they fall dead into the air that is growing colder by the second. She is delirious. She knows that she is, even as she realizes it, as she starts to count slow and breathe deep to force down her own panic. Even as she begins to gain a hold over her emotions, she can feel the way the very air seems to grab her emotions and twist them into something slippery and rotten, and her head is in her hands and her knees hit the floor. John shudders where he sits. His back still to her, but she swerves for a moment. He almost seems to turn his head as if in response to the sound of her fall. But that isn't possible. Sam throws her head back, staring at the ceiling and forcing herself not to curl up like every reflex inside her is screaming to do. It is a mistake, of course. The walls in the wood of the rafters are crawling and opening to watch her, and there are things coiled in the shadows above, and they are looking at her, but they can't be, because that isn't how this works. I open the door, John roars, and Sam is thrown bodily across the room and back into the wall, and they are here, they are here, they are here. And Sam is seizing and screaming into the burgundy rock on her own bedroom floor, and there is a loud thud downstairs and stamping footsteps, and there are arms around her, familiar arms, warm arms, a voice she recognizes and knows, and... I'm here, Sam. Hey, it's okay. You're safe. You're safe. Nothing can hurt you. Nothing will hurt you, okay? Can you breathe with me? Come on, I'll start. Slowly, Mark pulls her back into herself, one ragged breath at a time. He doesn't let her go for a second, doesn't complain when she grips his hand so tight that his knuckles crack. She pushes her head into his chest, and he runs his hands through her hair, pulling her close and rocking slowly back and forth until her screams become sobs, become hiccups, and finally begin to fade while he shushes softly into her ear. Do you want to talk about it? He asks some minutes or hours later. Sam shakes her head sharply, but she feels like she has to say something. The fears, she whispers, and her voice comes out cracked and dry. She swallows. The fears. She tries again. Her voice is a bit smoother this time. When they broke into reality, they... Something else broke, I think. It almost pulled me across. I feel like I was going to get stuck there, like I'd never get to come back. Mark squeezes her tightly, and she shakes her head. Not like nobody could see me, like I always stand and watch through some kind of gossamer veil, and they almost tore it apart, reaching for me, trying to pull me where they were.
Do you mean like...
Sam feels Mark's weight shift under her, but he doesn't let her go.
Like you might have, I don't know, actually gone back? Like you could do more than watch?
Sam thinks of the way John almost seemed to turn to one side as if to glimpse her in his peripheral vision.
I don't know, she whispers. Maybe.
Mark squeezes her again.
Please don't go back in there, he whispers. His voice shakes and her own grip tightens. I don't know what I would do if...
Sam waits, but he doesn't say anything else, just keeps rocking her gently and running his hands through her hair. She shivers at the sensation and leans into his warmth.
I'm here, she murmurs back to him. I'm here. I'm real.
She doesn't name the fear she is trying to chase away. The scars Damien's left on Mark are still tender. She can be here for him, though, just as he is here for her. Mark relaxes the tiniest bit.
Yeah, he replies.
Me too. Sam closes her eyes and tries not to think too hard about the way John trembled in his chair, about the way the thunder crept in on a wind carried by his voice, about the way he was alone when he ended the world. She feels like there is some sort of grand sweeping statement to be made about that, or about the parallels, or metaphors, or dream logic, or fear. Maybe there is even something to be said about mistakes, or overextending, or privacy. But right now, she can't think about all that. The world swallowed up until there's nothing left but this little patch of burgundy throw rug, and Mark's sweater, covered in Darwin's fur, and the way he fills up all her senses. Instead, she breathes and closes her eyes, and thanks the ground beneath her feet for its existence, and cries for the aching, hollowed place in her chest, caved open with fear and grief and guilt, and she curses herself for asking how a man could end the world. The end. Thank you for listening. This has been recorded for ITPE 2023 as a treat for God of Laundry Baskets. I hope you enjoyed. I honestly went into the bright sessions tag and only decided to check, like, oh yeah, there's probably at least one crossover that's like good and fun and all of that, because it's like a good fandom. I loved the podcast while it was coming out, so yeah, let's check them out. And then I got this, the Magnus Archives crossover, and I was like, oh, this one's actually perfect, maybe, for baskets. And yeah, it is part of a series, but the first part of the series is a huge 100k work, and that's way too much for me as a podficker, for me to give up as a treat. But I thought this one stood well on its own, and the author also says that, under author note, that it stands well on its own, so I thought it would be nice. So I hope you enjoyed listening, and I hope anyone else who listened enjoyed it. And so I hope you enjoyed listening. Thank you for taking the time to listen, and please remember to drink some water today.